welcome to Global Journalist on KBIA. This is the program that says mid-Missourians, indeed many Americans, are interested in international news. I'm Stuart Lurie of the Missouri School of Journalism. Can there ever be a peaceful settlement in the Middle East? The conflict refuses to ease, despite pressures on both Palestinian Arabs and Israelis to stop the violence and begin negotiations. The pressures come from countries all over the world. Secretary of State Colin Powell was scheduled to arrive in Israel today to begin discussions with both sides aimed at turning the violence off. Whether he will be effective is doubtful, but he will meet with Ariel Sharon tomorrow and with Yasser Arafat on Saturday. We have guests today from the United Kingdom and Germany, two strong allies of the United States, and I would like them to talk about how American efforts are viewed among the allied countries. Those guests are Hans Christian Rossler, Associate Editor for Africa and the Middle East for the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung in Frankfurt, Germany, and Simon Tisdall, Assistant Editor of The Guardian in London. Our third guest is in Jerusalem. He is Micha Odenheimer, a rabbi and journalist who recently left his own torn-up country to go to Nepal to investigate the Maoist uprising there. Let's start with Micha Odenheimer. Micha, did you learn anything in the Himalayan mountains that might be helpful in devising a settlement in your own country?
Wow, I really wish I had. I actually went to Nepal because it's so hard for me to write about what's going on here. I feel quite paralyzed in terms of the situation here. And I can't say that I learned anything in Nepal that really helps me understand what's going on here, except to say that it's a it's a time in the world, in this kind of post-communist world, post two great superpower world, where all kinds of things are popping up that I think that we never thought that we would see again. And one of them is Maoism, and another is the intensity of the hatred and rage in terms of what's going on here in Israel and in the Palestinian territories.
The Maoists, they are also considered to be terrorists, or are they conducting a more conventional kind of uprising?
The Maoists have a lot of support among the vast majority of the population that's impoverished. And I think that, of course, the government sees them as terrorists, but they have never targeted civilians. They have targeted political figures, but mostly the killing has been, the targets have been policemen and soldiers. So they're not terrorists in that sense. They have bombed the Coca-Cola factory in Kathmandu several times, several distilleries. They've used bombs, but I think that you can't compare them exactly to what we're calling terrorists here in Israel, because they have always attempted to not cause civilian injuries. I think mainly because they still have a very strong chance to keep having some kind of hold on the hearts and minds of the people in Nepal, and they don't want to ruin that chance.
Yeah, we all think of Nepal as a very peaceful country set in the Himalayan mountains without very many problems, and yet we were startled last year when the whole royal family was assassinated. Why is there a Maoist uprising in this country when that kind of communism has disappeared almost completely around the world?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, there's sort of two Nepals. There's the Nepal of Kathmandu and the tourist areas, the trekking areas around the Himalayas. And that part of Nepal is relatively prosperous, at least for some substantial part of the population. But most of Nepal is terribly impoverished. It's one of the five poorest countries in the world. And somehow, because perhaps of its isolation, Maoist groups that are incidentally connected more to groups in India than they are to China, they have really very little connection to China, They do have some connection to Maoist groups in areas like Bihar, which is the poorest state in India, have continued throughout the whole time when the monarchy was ruling as a dictator in the 60s and 70s and 80s to still believe in their ideology of Maoism. And somehow when democracy began in the beginning of 1990, and this is sort of one of the interesting points, there was great hope, and it was sort of out of the dashed hopes for democracy that the Maoist movement started to gain strength. People really thought that things were going to get better, and for the majority of people, things didn't get better. And that's sort of how the Maoists started to gain more and more popularity.
Is there any chance that Maoism is going to take hold in Nepal, that it will come to power?
In terms of if you would have gone to election, say, 4 or 5 months ago, if the Maoists had agreed to put down their guns and go to elections, I think they would have become a very strong party and maybe even have captured the majority. But they weren't really willing to do that. They want a what they call a republic. They want a change in the constitution. I don't think that they're going to be able to win a military victory, because I think that, first of all, India will not allow it, that even if pitted against the Nepali army, they might have a chance of winning, that what would happen at that point was that India's far more powerful army would come in. Okay. So I don't think there's a chance that they're going to take control, but they do have a lot of influence, and they may be able to keep destabilizing the country, or alternatively, if they go to peace negotiations again, they could push the country towards such moves as land reform, which would, change the economy and the situation for many people.
Okay, Micha Odenheimer, we would like to talk to you for the rest of the program about Nepal and about how you trekked through the mountains there to get to the Maoist groups. But the story that is on everybody's mind is the Middle East. So let's turn to our guests in Western Europe. The European Union has called upon Israel to withdraw its forces. Israel has ignored the European Union, and it has pretty consistently ignored the European Union. What's going on? Simon Tisdall, do you want to start?
Well, it's not only the European Union that's been snubbed by Ariel Sharon, it's the United States government as well, which is a more salient point, really, because although the European Union would like to pretend it has a lot of influence and say-so in what goes on in the Arab-Israeli conflict, it's always been the United States who's actually called the shots. The problem that some Europeans perceive from their perspective for the last 18 months or so has been that the Bush administration, unlike its predecessors, was not engaged in the Middle East peace process, that they were wedded to a hands-off incremental approach. And that, wedded with the advent of Ariel Sharon as prime minister, led to a radicalization of both Israeli and Palestinian opinion, which has led us to the current impasse. Again, from the European perspective, the speech made by President George Bush last week, in which he appeared to change some of the positions he'd previously espoused and come more into line with the European Union's view of what should be happening in the Holy Land, now brings Colin Powell into a very difficult situation. He's coming in 18 months too late, in a sense, having wasted a lot of time, and has all the problems that are built up in that intervening period to deal with almost all at once.
Hans Christian, do you want to add anything to that?
Yes, one can agree in a way that Powell is coming too late, even if he had not been able to come 18 months ago because he was not foreign minister then. But from a German perspective, there are high hopes on Colin Powell's mission. Everybody knows that it will be extremely difficult, and the best thing he could achieve for now would be some sort of ceasefire or sort of limiting, containing the violence of the last weeks. At the same time, what became apparent during the past months was that Europe can't do much, and we could see it even in Germany, because the German foreign minister, Joschka Fischer, tried to get involved a couple of times in constructive ways in the Middle East. He had one fairly successful mission last June, after one of the terrible terror attacks, but this led really to not to nothing, but to almost nothing, because the violence continued. And even now, Germany tries to get involved with a new peace plan by Mr. Fischer, who was proposed just the other day. But what became clear, and what is clear now, is that it cannot be in competition with the United States, but has sort of to complement moves made by the U.S. administration in the region.
The European Union has threatened economic sanctions against Israel unless it stops its military activities in the occupied territories. Israel has ignored the European Union. Will those sanctions be put into place?
Well, sanctions against Israel have been threatened many times. Almost after every escalation in the region, there was a threat of sanctions. But that the 15 member states get their act together and have a move in common with sanctions or so, it's difficult to see. We have to wait and see on Monday. I think the European foreign ministers are meeting and are talking about it, but it seems to be another threat which won't be pushed by Germany. This is what I can say from here.
Ariel Sharon appears to be ignoring not only the European Union and not only the Bush administration in the United States, but also the United Nations and Russia. He is ignoring a lot of power around the world. How does he get away with it? Micha, do you want to start with that?
How does he get away with it?
Yeah.
I think that he is right now is riding on a wave of public support, and that's what he's a politician, and he's mainly concerned about support he has from the Israeli public. And I think that as long as the public is still feeling this kind of elemental horror at the fact that they can walk out or take a bus or go to a restaurant and get blown up any second, that they're gonna keep giving him that support, and we're gonna be keep being trapped in the situation. I think that he's spending a lot more time looking over his shoulder at Netanyahu and trying to consolidate his coalition and make sure that he sits in the driver's seat. He doesn't really care about certainly not about the UN or about the European Union, who the right here perceives as being biased in favor of the Palestinians and of not being tough enough, not giving the message strong enough to Arafat that he has to stop the suicide bombings. He should care about the United States. But I still think that it's going to take a lot of pressure and perhaps promises from the United States to get him to listen to them while he thinks that what he's got to do to stay in power is to keep trying to show the Israeli public that he's not going to get let the Palestinians get away with murder.
Simon, Prime Minister Blair has been a strong supporter of the United States so far. Is he going to continue that support, or will he back away from it?
You're setting that support in the context of the war against terrorism.
Well,
I
am. Yeah. Yes, that's
yeah.
true.
Which is not necessarily the same thing in the view of many people as what's going on in Israel. Although the Israeli government has tried to draw a parallel with their battles with the Palestinian extremist groups, with the United States battles with Al Qaeda and terrorists of that ilk. That's a very controversial parallel and not accepted by a lot of people here. I think Blair is in the position of trying to show strong support for U.S. policy, while at the same time taking a good notice of the Arab and Palestinian constituency, which in this kind of country is very sympathetic to their cause. It's not a black and white issue in Britain by any means, and he has to play both sides of the field. In the House of Commons yesterday, he tried very hard to keep everything in line with what Colin Powell was doing, and my colleagues are quite right. Everything is now riding on Colin Powell's mission, since the European Union and others have not made any headway at all. When it comes to Iraq, which is a slightly different issue in the Middle East, Blair has real problems. His party is deeply divided. The country is not very supportive. There's a lot of a public opinion which is fiercely against another military adventure in Iraq. But that issue is still some way down the road.
Can I break in for just one moment and just comment on something?
Sure, go ahead.
I wanted to say that my colleague from England was saying about extremist groups, I think that that's one of the big changes that's happened over the past month or so, is that many people have this division. Many Israelis believe that, okay, Arafat, maybe he wasn't tough enough on the extremist groups, he didn't make a crackdown. Now I think that the great majority of Israelis, not everyone, but the great majority believes that Arafat has been supporting the suicide bombers. I mean, the fact is that his Fatah has been sending suicide bombers, and there have been documents that have come out that show that Arafat has been supporting, and the statements that he's made about martyrdom and statements that in other words, I don't think the Israeli public at this point perceives a difference between, and this is a tragedy, but perceives a difference between the Jihad Islami and the Hamas and the policies that Arafat are supporting. That's really the problem.
Okay, we'll come back to this discussion in a moment. We have to take a break. This is Global Journalist on KBIA. I'm Stuart Lurie. Welcome back to Global Journalist. You may listen to this program again, ask questions, or make comments by going to www.globaljournalist.org or by calling us here in Mid-Missouri at 573-882-9641. Before we left, Micha Odenheimer was making a point about the involvement of Yasser Arafat with the terrorist movement. I would like to ask Hans Christian Rössler, has Arafat been weathering the storm as far as his acceptance is concerned in West Germany, or is he being perceived there as a leader of the terrorist movement as well?
Well, there have been a set of sort of opinions or on that. Let me take my newspaper. So we always try to differentiate the roles Arafat plays and also the way the PA, the Palestinian Autonomy Authority, worked and functions. Of course, the PA was never, even if the Palestinians wanted it to be, some sort of state already, but it was not a state with a proper administration, with some sort of responsible government as we know it from Germany, Britain, or United States. So it was a rather chaotic institution which tried to incorporate all trends of Palestinian politics, be it extremists, as it turned out, and other people. But in a way, to generalize, even German public opinion is sort of turning away from Arafat. But the problem is to see at the same time TV pictures from Bethlehem or Jenin or wherever, and there seem terrible things to happen. And it's difficult for many Germans, and I can see it from comments I get from our readers, from letters and emails, sort of to let 3 million Palestinians suffer, or somehow the perception is that they are punished for what a leadership probably does or condones with, which is not okay. Of course, there seem to be proof that leading PA people have links to terrorism. But the question is still for many Germans, is it the right strategy? Of course, you have to crush terrorism and to get hold of the terrorists. But at the same time, has the Palestinian population suffered so much?
Yeah. It's Simon Tisdall. In the United Kingdom, how is the Palestinian side of the story being viewed?
Well, as I said earlier, there's a lot of sympathy for the Palestinians, but not, I should emphasize very strongly, for the suicide bombers and others who seek to achieve their ends by very violent means targeted on the civilian population of Israel. It's important to make the distinction, and my paper and others try and do that all the time, which is that while we recognize the necessity and the desirability of a Palestinian state, the two-state solution that was agreed initially in the Oslo process, and although we understand some of the problems that Israel has with that, we can't condone and we do not accept the extreme forms of violence that are perpetrated by both sides, whether it's suicide bombing by the Palestinians, which we think undermines their case, or whether it's heavy-handed or even more so military action against in civilian areas, which are seeing at the moment by the Israeli army. Both are unacceptable, I think, to most British opinion. You know, this whole issue is seen very much through the prism here of what's happened in Northern Ireland over the last couple of decades. We had, as everyone knows, a very bitter internecine conflict there, which has, to some extent, been sorted by a very difficult, very problematic, but nevertheless viable peace process. And what the British government is saying, what a lot of British people think, is, well, in the end, you have to talk, you have to compromise, you have to give ground, literally, in the case of Israel. Sooner or later, they're going to have to do that, so why not make it sooner?
Well, Israel, up until a year ago, when Ehud Barak was in power, was ready to grant Palestine, to grant a state, an independent state, to the Palestinian Arabs. And yet this has now all fallen through. Do we think that a Palestinian state is no longer a possibility for that part of the world?
I think, speaking for myself, that it's absolutely a viable possibility, but not while Ariel Sharon is prime minister. You need a change of leadership in Israel, and you probably need a change of leadership on the Palestinian side. That's what my newspaper's also been arguing, that Arafat, like Sharon, is still not really the man of the future now, not a bit too stuck in the past, but too compromised by previous actions, and that you need new interlocutors if this process is to move forward now.
And Hans Christian, what about the view from Frankfurt?
I would agree in general terms what was said from London. Having been a couple of times in the Middle East, it's still a bit difficult to imagine to have a viable Palestinian state there. The necessity for a Palestinian state is there, and there's no doubt about it. And you would find support, I think among all Germans in the German press, this is said once again and again. But if you see a state, for example, needs some sort of territory under its control and not islands of control in different measures, as it happened under the PA so far. So for a viable Palestinian state, there is really a very long way to go with tricky questions.
The headline on a major story in the New York Times this morning is, attacks turn Palestinian plans into bent metal and piles of dust. This is a story by Serge Schmemann, who is based in Jerusalem for the Times, about how Israeli tanks and bulldozers and sappers are, as he puts it, virtually destroying the landscape and turning it into an unusable war zone. Micha, is that being reported in Israel?
I think everyone in Israel sees the television, pictures of what went on, especially in specific cities, in Nablus and in Jenin, and I think everyone is in shock about it, and some people are in agony about it. Some people probably are happy about it. I think that there's a feeling in Israel that there's a double standard, that when Russia bombs Grozny to pieces because there was a bomb in Moscow, everyone sort of looks the other way, and when America goes into Afghanistan and bombs the hell out of that country, killing who knows how many civilians, then there's very, very little outcry. And I think that's part of our kind of instinctive response. You know, here we have this force. We don't know what to do with it. We don't know what to do with the problem. I mean, we went into Jenin. We could have bombed the hell out of the refugee camp. We didn't do that. We sacrificed people's lives, our soldiers' lives, because we didn't do that. On the other hand, you look at those pictures and you say, what the hell are we doing? I mean, I think that people are, like I started at the beginning, that there's sort of a feeling of paralysis among many people. And I think that in some kind of way the tide is beginning to turn and we're beginning to realize that it's time now to move back and to see if there's any way that we can start to find some kind of Palestinian partners, some kind of way to move forward, because you know, you look at those pictures and they are shocking.
Yeah, as a practical matter, if you destroy the country, as the New York Times story today indicates is happening, then after there is a settlement, you make the implementation of that settlement only that much more difficult.
I don't think I didn't read the Times story, and I'm going to go back and read it after we get off the show. But I don't think we're talking about destroying the country. I think that there are specific areas and cities that are very precious to people that have undergone massive damage. But I don't think we're really talking about the major part of the land. I mean, doesn't seem logical to me.
The countries mentioned, or the cities mentioned, are Ramallah, Bethlehem, Tulkarm, Qalqilya, Nablus, and Jenin. That mm-hmm. seems to me to be a lot of the West Bank.
Well, no. In terms of that's most of the important cities in the West Bank. But most of the West Bank is our villages. I mean, you're talking about the inner city of the major cities in the West Bank, which is a lot, but you're not talking about, you know, the landscape. Most of the West Bank is rural.
Okay, we have 2 minutes left, and I would like to spend it talking a little bit about the future. Simon Tisdall, you go first. Put on your prophet's hat and speculate a little bit about what is going to happen in the next few days and then over the long term.
Well, in the very short term, I think there already has been some mild Israeli genuflection to the imminent arrival of the U.S. Secretary of State. There has been some pullbacks in some areas, and there'll probably be more. And Colin Powell, who's not set a time limit on his visit, has said that he'll stick around until he gets some kind of progressive agreement, whether that's just yet another patched-up ceasefire or something more substantial. We have to wait and see. But I think in the very short term, the intensity of the conflict over the last few days will probably be reduced. Now, the other thing that Colin Powell is out to do on behalf of George Bush is to restart a political process, not just a security process, and that's going to be much more problematic. There's a lot of talk about a set of declaratory principles, about the new Saudi peace plan, about new UN Security Council resolutions, about an international monitoring force, and so on. These are big ideas. They've been rejected in the past. Sharon, given the political situation within his cabinet, is not in a position to really deliver on any of those. So getting the new political process going is, going to be extremely difficult.
Okay. Hans Christian Rössler, if you could take about 30 seconds, your thoughts.
Well, I would say you can already see that the Palestinians are running out of supply and ammunition, so this will slow down and stop fighting pretty soon. What will continue somehow will be acts of terror. There would be enough people willing to become suicide bombers. And this will be a test also for both sides to get back to negotiations, even under this sort of terrorist fire or under continued terrorist attacks. So
Hans Christian, I'm sorry, but we are out of time. Our guests today have been in London, Simon Tisdall of The Guardian in Frankfurt, Hans Christian Rössler of the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, and in Jerusalem, Rabbi Micha Odenheimer, a journalist. Our director is Pat Akers, and our producer, Sarah Andrea Fajardo. for all. I'm Stuart Lurie, global journalist. We'll be back next week.